My name is Brad Thompson, and I'm a licensed professional counselor, and I'm also a peer support specialist for the Child Neurology Foundation. I'm also Haley's dad. Haley is a 30-year-old young lady with a variety of special health care needs, including a seizure disorder. Today, I'm thrilled to get to join a conversation with a couple of experts today, which is just a part of the series that we're doing with the Child Neurology Foundation around issues and challenges that families are facing around the COVID-19 virus and all the things that are going along with that. So today I'm blessed to be joined by Dr. Al Friedman and also Dr. Jill Emanuel. And I'm going to give them a chance briefly to introduce themselves, and then we will jump into our topic of what it's like to deal with sibling relationships, especially in this time. Jill, would you like to go first?
Be happy to. Thanks so much for having me. My name is Dr. Jill Emanuel. I am a clinical psychologist in New York City at a place called the Child Mind Institute, which is a nonprofit that is dedicated to advancing children's mental health. I am the senior director of the Mood Disorder Center there, and we provide evidence-based treatments along with doing research and providing advocacy for children with mental health needs and learning disorders.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. Al?
Thank you, Brad. Thank you for having me. My name is Al Friedman. I'm coming to you from outside of Philadelphia, where I'm a practicing child and family psychologist in independent practice. I'm also the father of Jack and father of Kara. Jack is affected by a neuromuscular disease called SMA, or spinal muscular atrophy. He's 25 years old and has very complicated medical needs. And I'm very lucky to be his dad, and I'm very happy to be here to support families like mine.
Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Really, truthfully, we probably should have had Kara and Justin on this and let them talk about what it's really like to be a sibling, but we'll just let y'all's professional expertise do all the work here. So just first, just a question, what are some concerns that you're hearing from your communities about children who have a sibling who has a neurologic condition, especially in this time of COVID-19?
Al, why don't you go first, since you have a child with a neurological condition? Go from there.
Yeah, well, for my kids and for families that I know who have a neurologic condition, The pandemic has presented a number of challenges and a number of opportunities. My daughter is home now from college unexpectedly, and like any college student, she's not happy about that. But she's home, and she's home with her brother now, and everybody's together, which is a positive thing, but she needs her space. The siblings of kids with neurological conditions need their own space, their own time, their own place to be themselves and to do the things they need to do while they're also being siblings. And some of the siblings that, including my daughter, who I know, do have some and feel some responsibility for their affected siblings and try to keep a balance between meeting their own needs and meeting the needs of their families. And some of the siblings that I know and work with in my practice and who I know personally sometimes have a significant amount of responsibility sharing the care of us. And right now, because of the pandemic, there are families who typically have people in their homes to provide care, respite care or nursing care, who are declining that care now because of the risks associated with having someone in the home. So for these families and for siblings in that situation, there are some additional challenges because the family is caring for the child with special needs without help when they typically do have help. So those are a couple of the things that are unique to the situation that have been pretty prevalent among the families that I work with and my own.
Yeah, I would say that is an additional stressor when you're used to having maybe skilled nursing or respite, and now that's not available for one reason or another. So, yeah, that adds a lot of stress to a home. Jill, what are you seeing?
Yeah, I can speak on a more universal basis. Working with children with mental health needs, I'm hearing families say a lot of different things, including increased stressors due to being in close quarters all the time, not having contact with their regular communities, the kids not being in school, and also having help of any kind that they usually have, being able to come into the home, particularly with kids with academic needs or kids who receive tutor, for example, kids who receive tutoring, or even just being able to get to the doctor sometimes because of the limitations that are imposed. I think one of the big things I'm hearing from people right now is fear and uncertainty, because there's just, and how to cope with that, because there's just no way to know how this is going to end or when it's going to end and what our lives are going to be like in the long term. We just know probably they're going to be different in some way and or many ways. So that's causing a lot of consternation, and then it causes stress in the family system, which then also impacts the kids. And so we're seeing behavioral problems, we're seeing kids with mood changes, with more anxiety. So it's definitely, it's impacting greatly.
Yeah, in a couple of other settings, we've talked about how this has almost created a global survival mode.
Yeah.
And everybody's just living day to day and waking up to a new day every day. And that's stressful in itself, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So Jill, what tips do you have for parents who are trying to manage these sibling relationships in this environment where they're trying to figure out what their life looks like day to day?
For sure. So I'll start off with a few things that I always start off with parents, which is, in order to take care of the family, you have to take care of yourself. And so it's that old metaphor of putting the oxygen mask on the plane on you first rather than your kid. So how does that look? All right. And so, because a child with neurological needs requires a lot of care, sometimes 24/7. So how does a parent have time to be able to manage that? So it's more useful when there's a couple or there's more people in the home to be able to help. So having some time, a little time for self-care, even if it's just 10 minutes a day, to be able to do something like sit or to be able to do something like watch a quick video or meditate or anything that will help you to do that. That's the first thing. The second thing is, particularly since we're talking about siblings, is don't hesitate to enlist the help of siblings in caring for the child with needs. And at the same time, honoring that sibling needs space and time to themselves, and that they might have certain reactions to your asking for help. But I would imagine a lot of kids are going to pitch in as best as they can. And you can to explain why you need that help and listen to their needs and concerns. So that's another thing that comes to mind immediately. And to really also, with families, to be able to schedule time to talk and to each other and spend time together. Because I know a lot of people are just trying to manage their jobs, the care of the kids, everything else, and to be able to have at least a little family time each day to be able to come together, not necessarily talk about how horrible or doomsday this is, but to actually just talk about how are you doing, what's going on, what did you watch today on TV, or what did you talk about in school, something to make life feel more normal and to get into a routine of things so life feels a little bit more predictable in the face of unpredictability.
Yeah, don't you think that kids are looking to their parents for some sense of peace and calm, and parents are the ones who have a perspective of, we've probably been through some hard things before.
Yeah.
And so we will survive this. So, right.
Yeah.
Al, anything you'd add to that?
Yeah. To add to what Jill said, I think it's important for all of us to do all the same things for our kids that we normally do, but to actually try to do them even better. You know, the reality is that our kids are always watching us. They're always watching us. And that's a permanent state. The pandemic is a temporary state, but our kids are watching us, and they're watching how we're reacting to this uncertain time. And there is a lot of uncertainty and there is a lot of fear. So they're watching to see how we react to that. And as Jill said, it's so important for us as parents to take care of ourselves so that we can be properly balanced to model for our kids everything we want them to see in us. And as parents, with our kids who have neurological conditions or not, it's important for us to be gentle and be kind. And right now, because of the uncertainty, our kids are feeling this uncertainty as well. I know my daughter is, as a 20-year-old college student, and sometimes she's in a better mood than other times. And my job as a dad is to, you know, check in with her and to listen to her and see what she needs. There are times when she doesn't want to talk, and there are times that she can't wait to talk. And so as a dad, I'm kind of riding the waves that she's on and being gentle and kind as I can to accommodate where she is at any given time. And as a sibling of a child with very complicated medical needs, I think it's important for me as a dad to give her one-on-one time when I can, however I can, when she wants it, so that she has that time with me, knowing that my time is limited because of her brother's special needs. And that's her whole life's been that way. But to give her the one-on-one time and to be gentle and to be accommodating to what she needs right now, given that everybody's living with this uncertainty and everybody's in close quarters and it's hard to get out and do the social things that she normally does. I think for every family, this plays out a little differently. I'm describing how it is with my two kids. But to me, it's all about our kids are watching us and we want to model to them what we want them to do in this situation as well. So if they see us being able to handle the uncertainty and they see us being able to make decent decisions and they see us handling this unusual situation with dignity, then they're going to feel safer and in more control, and they're going to behave better if we behave better. Yeah. It's that simple and it's that complicated at the same time.
Yeah, Jill, you were going to say something a minute ago if you're
good. I think Al may have covered it, so.
All right. And Al, I think you really kind of started moving into the next question I wanted to ask. And I'm really interested in your perspective with your daughter, Kara, having been away from home at school for a while. And so kind of creating her own identity in a different space. And now she's back together with you guys as a family unit and in a confined space where we don't have the freedom of movement that we're used to enjoying. How do you balance all of that? The need to be a family and the need to give people their independence and space and recognizing that there's going to be disagreement and all that stuff. How do you recommend to families to manage all of that?
What I recommend to families is to be kind and compassionate and flexible during this time of uncertainty, especially when we're dealing with teenagers. We're dealing with teenagers. Being an adolescent is a complicated time when there isn't a pandemic.
Right.
And if you're in a family where there's stress because of an additional medical issue, a neurological issue, it's another stressor. So flexibility and adaptability is really important. And right now, I think it's really important for families to construct and follow new routines. The absence of structure is very hard for kids. Kids who are typically at school every day, my daughter typically at college every day, and now her program is more fluid. And for the kids I work with professionally and the families that I know personally, the absence of structure, the absence of school is very difficult. And the absence of the routine for the child who has a special program because of a neurologic condition is also hard. So for families, my recommendation is to try to create new routines that become familiar and become part of the fabric of the day that can be repeated. So they become, everybody gets used to these routines the way we get used to the routines we had before, will eliminate some of the stress. And part of those routines, as Jill had mentioned before, is planning time together, one-on-one time and family time to relax and take a break from the realities of this difficult time, and to not watch the news and to not saturate ourselves with what's not possible and what we can't control, but to take some of the family that some of our routines should include planned time to have fun, to watch a movie, to play a game, to just read a book, and to have some solitude are all important pieces of a day for families now, as they were before. But we all have to be more intentional about creating that routine or that structure that isn't there for us in the same way that it usually is. That kind of predictable routine gives us more of a sense of control. And when our kids feel that predictability in their routine and that sense of control, then anxiety goes down. People feel better.
I love the word you use, intentional. Jill, what would you say to that?
Yeah, those are all wise words. I think what I would add on also is I'm seeing people talking about feeling emotions or avoiding emotions, and to allow space for all sorts of different feelings to come in and to recognize there's not something wrong with you. Who's dealt with a pandemic before that's alive? Nobody. So, yeah. I mean, in any kind of way like this. Yeah. So to allow for those emotions to come in, to feel them, sit with them, and to talk about them. And so that's where a parent can be a real force in the family, to be able to allow kids to be able to talk about their feelings and listen to it without trying to problem solve, just to hear it and hold it and to listen to each other, or even a sibling doing the same thing for another sibling. That can help happen too. But one of the things that I hear people doing sometimes is just pretending everything's fine and everything's going to be okay. And you can only suspend the unreality, if you will, for a while. Yeah. It's not okay. Things are really hard right now. And to allow that stress to come in and deal with it rather than push it away. You can push it away sometimes, you know, you have to, you can't live with it all the time, but allow the feelings to come in. That's a big tip. I think that's really important.
I love that. Yeah. Let's talk about the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
So we have a couple of minutes left. You guys are out in different parts of the country. What are some things that you're seeing in communities that seem to be doing better at some things than others, and especially when it comes to family, sibling relationships, and mental health during this pandemic?
I can start. I in communities, well, I live in New York City, so yeah. There's a lot going on here. So I would say one of the things I've seen, not only within families, but within communities, are people are reaching out to each other and helping in ways that are just amazing, and trying to provide support and help to one another, to the first responders. Here in New York City, every night at 7 p.m., we all cheer for the first responders and on all the essential workers every single night. So I think that those are things that people are doing for each other, and looking out for the families in need. You know, if a person has coronavirus and a parent is trying to deal with that and trying to take care of kids, other families are coming in and getting supplies and doing things for each other. So the response has been tremendous, and to help look out for one another. I'll just add that in really quickly.
Yeah, I think that's great.
Yeah, but I'm seeing something similar. I'm seeing families getting to know each other differently and getting to know each other better, because they're together and have time with each other. And our society, our culture has been very busy and is busy. And this pandemic, as painful as it is, there are some positive unanticipated consequences of families growing closer together because of the opportunity to be together. Mm-hmm. Second, I see, as Jill's reminding me of 9/11, as painful as that experience was, and especially in New York City, crisis brings out the best in people sometimes. And I see and sense a move from fear to love, fear to gratitude, bringing out the best in people to take care of each other and look out for each other. That's happening within families, and that's happening within the communities. And third thing I'll tell you, as a family therapist, and my whole practice has moved online very abruptly. One thing I've noticed is, that's pretty funny, is the happiest member of every family that I work with. I've met a lot of siblings that I didn't know before, and I've now met a number of family dogs. And I'll tell you that the happiest member of every single family I work with is the dog. because it's home and the dogs are getting walked about 25 times a day.
Right.
So, I suspect the dogs may have something to do with this pandemic because they're living really large right now. They're very happy. That's something else that I've seen. Yeah.
They are the greatest beneficiaries of this whole deal. There's always a group that benefits, right? Now we know
that.
I want to thank you guys so much for giving us your time, and I think it's going to be a lot of help. I really appreciate you pointing out that, unfortunately, tragedy happens, and one of the things we see is that as Americans, and I'm only familiar with our culture, is that the neighborly spirit still rises. And we see the goodness in people, and it does our hearts good, even in the most difficult of times. And so thank you for sharing all of your expertise in a 20-minute window. And I just want to end our time with this, that we know at CNF that one of the best things we can be doing right now is the social distancing and staying in our homes and doing all of that. And at the same time, we recognize that one of the challenges in doing that is that it's easy to become isolated. And there are some tough mental health challenges that come with isolation. And there are tough relationship things that come with being isolated together for too long. And what we want you to know is that we are doing these videos and are just being available to do whatever we can to be that listening ear to help people stay emotionally healthy. And so if you don't have someone to connect with, just know that we at the Family Support and Empowerment Program are here to connect. We won't have all the answers, but we will certainly hear your story and listen and be an encouragement to you. So if this has been helpful to you, and you would like more information and more resources to help navigate this journey of COVID-19 with your family and your children, please check out CNF's COVID-19 Resource Center at www.childneurologyfoundation.org/COVID-19. Together, we will get through this. Together, we are all child neurology.